सर्वभद्राणि पश्यतु सर्वः सर्वबुद्धिमाप्नोतु सर्वः सर्वत्र नन्दतु सर्वेत्र सुखिनः सन्तु सर्वे सन्तु निरामयाः सर्वे भद्राणि पश्यन्तु मा कश्चित् माहेश्वरी स्वाहा एतत् पाद्यं श्री मीराय
friends, a great welcome, Gautambhai. It's a pleasure to have you once again. Last time you spoke on harmonious relationships, and since at least I have developed many more harmonious relationships. Today is going to talk on a topic which is in the beginning quite stark, and I was wondering what it is. So I really am keenly waiting to hear what you're going to talk about, death and relationship between death and true love. So thank you for coming and generously sharing. This is a great moment for us, and I hand over the mic to you so that we can start.
Thank you. Namaste. Pondicherry has been very dear to me because I discovered Pondicherry and Thiruvannamalai in the same year, which is the year 2000. And since then, every year I have been visiting the samadhis of the renowned masters, Sri Aurobindo and the Mother, as well as Sri Ramana Maharshi. I'd like to thank Lalit and Srinath for inviting me again to this beautiful space. Beautiful artwork behind me, Ma, could not be more appropriate in this sacred space of the Mother. As we all know, the new Ram Mandir has been consecrated. Seeing this behind me reminded me of something, which is the word Ram exists long before Lord Ram. It is an ancient word, Ram, which is Ram and Ma, the sun and the moon. The Egyptians also had this word, Ram, where Ra was the sun and Ma was the divine feminine. So it is a very ancient vibration which has been invoked. And as we all know, Ma is the divine mother which takes you to the path. It is the Shakti which takes you to Shiva. I was very fortunate to meet a mystic in Bombay who had spent many years with Mahavatar Babaji, the Deathless Master. And he told me, I asked him if he could sum up his teaching in one sentence. His name, incidentally, was Dr. Ram Bhosle. And he said in one sentence, all I say is, God exists between the Ra and the Ma of Ra. God exists between the Ra and the Ma of Ra. That is why in the Hindu tradition, we find when we see a corpse being led to the funeral grounds, the chant is Ram Naam Satya Hai. Ram is the only truth. It's such a deep science. It's a science of vibration. Because Ra and Ma represents the primary polarities in duality, which brings us to the subject of this talk. Very simple talk, short and sweet, as Lalit said, he liked it and I like it too. Death and love, when I suggested this to Lalit as the topic, he was taken aback. Because people are still not comfortable with the word death. But I found that in my last few thoughts in Bombay, and I was traveling, this subject was coming up. And it is very important, I feel, for anyone on the path of knowledge and understanding to get this link, because these are the two most important words in our lives. Death is inevitable, and so is love. So we'll explore this very briefly. You see, the framework of life, as all of us know it, is duality. We are all born and are incarnated into the realm of two. Black and white, left and right, up and down, front and back, rich and poor, day and night, leisure and pain, me and the earth, good and evil. This is the realm of duality. There is no escaping it. The problem is that the me and the other became me versus the other. And so, death and love are the polarities in a sense which we need to understand to get out of this bondage. So the first thing is, we need to understand what the ego is and how we cannot kill the ego. Because we cannot kill that which we didn't create. When a baby is born, it is pure being, pure consciousness, pure love. The baby cannot judge anyone. But at some point, it is believed between the age of 1 and 2, this baby realizes that if I cry, my mother will come running. If I do something, something will happen. Till this point, when there was no ego, when it was pure being, the baby was looked after by the mother. It had no notion of doing something. This moment is the crucial moment because it is the birth of the ego. It is when the baby realizes, I am separate from what I am seeing. If I cry, something comes running and provides me with it. This ego gets shaped by its parents. Some of us have loving parents, some have abusive parents. It is shaped by the religion it is born into. It is shaped by the income group of the parents and the school it went to. And on the basis of this, of these factors, it developed what is called conditioning. So I am conditioned to see things a certain way. And the person opposite me need not see things the way I see them because their conditioning is different from mine. This is very important to understand that each view, each individual presence is valid. It may be different from yours, but the fact is nobody created their conditioning. Nobody created their nature. Nobody created their genetics on the basis of which they say things and do things. So what happens with this realization is, I no longer insist my way is the right way. It is the right way for me. But it is no longer my job to convince the other It is the only way. This brings about a new way of living. It is a living not based on conflict. Our daily living is based on conflict. We are really trying very hard to convince others of what we believe is the truth. When I start accepting this, that everyone does things based on factors which are not in their control, I find I start relaxing on life. I relax and release my views, opinions, and judgments of people. Who am I to judge? God knows His creation best. In my talk in Thiruvananmalai 3 days ago, we were doing the Giribalam of the sacred mountain in Arunachal. And there was a huge poster of a very controversial and flamboyant youth. And one man came up to me and he said, 2 days after attending my talks, when I was on the slope, someone came up to me and asked me, what is your opinion on science? What is your opinion on this world? And he said, the earlier we would have said, oh, he's like this, he's like that, and he's like this. And I was surprised. I found myself saying, he is exciting. So you see, this obsession with passing judgment on people for who they are is what dissolves. This is the beginning of the death of the thinking mind of the ego. I'm always thinking about the dead past or an imaginary future, what people should have said, what how they should have behaved with me, and so on and so forth. This obsession with should, would, and could. This is what drops away. Because my mantra becomes, everything is precisely the way it is, the way God made it. And so I come to one big revelation, that the ego is really not the problem, because I need it to function in daily living. I have to take action. I have to make decisions. The problem is, as it is said in the Bhagavad Gita, it is the sense of doership which has been assigned and taken over by the ego, which is the problem. I did it. You did it. You abused me, so I hate you. This doership, when it is seen for what it is, and it is uprooted from the ego, one finds life is no longer a problem. Because whom am I to blame? Let's say I have that one dysfunctional relationship, a sibling, a friend, a child, who's pushing my buttons all the time. And so far, I've been involved in a tennis match. Action and reaction, action and reaction, action and reaction. When is it going to end? Till your last breath? Is this the way to live life? And when I realize I'm not here to change people, I really don't see that as my role in life, because that would mean I know better than God. When I realize I accept people more and more for who they are, that is the death of the ego. So I start dying before I die. This journey, everyone's life journey, is a journey of death. It's a scary word, but it is true. It is the only certainty in life is death. Any spiritual endeavor, any spiritual inquiry, any ashram you go to, is addressing this fundamental word. It is not about the death of the physical body. We have not been born to just die. We have been born to understand the meaning of death. So tomorrow, on a very simplistic level, if, let's say, I have seen a movie which I love, and I meet someone, a friend at dinner, and say, hey, what a lovely movie. And the friend says, oh, I hated it. Are you able to die to your opinion that it was a lovely movie and allow the other person to hate the movie?
I use this example so often because I have seen fights take place where one friend loved a movie, the other one hated it, and then the first friend told the second friend, you have no taste. And then they got into another mudslinging match. You see, that's what we do. And if we understand death in the day, what all have we died to? We will find that this riddle of life and death gets solved. This is the beauty of the subject I speak about, non-duality, not two. Appears as two, not two. How not two? You look very different from me. We look as two. But the fact is, I am conscious, you are conscious. If either of us were not conscious, one would not be speaking, the other would not be listening. So the truth is, it is thanks to consciousness that speaking is happening, listening is happening. But because this is the Maya, this is the world of form, we lose sight of this fact that one divine consciousness is running the whole show. There is only one. The death is the death of two. This is the path to liberation. I have studied enough of the mother's teachings as well to know that all teachings are driving home this point. If you find yourself quite rude to someone, the fact is you are being rude to God because God created that person. But we are so busy pointing fingers and accusing and blaming and condemning that we lose sight of this. There's no room for compassion in our lives. Ours is a selective compassion. The people we love, we feel compassionate about. The people we hate can go to hell. And that is why the American mystic Joel Goldsmith said, it's too easy to pray for your loved ones. Anyone can do it. What's the big deal? Try praying for your enemies. Then we will know where you stand. Then we will know if you have understood the teachings. His teachings were based on Jesus Christ's teachings. Not my will, O Lord, but thine be done. When we accept nothing is really in our control, our breath is not in our control, the blood coursing through our veins is not in our control, the earth is spinning, not in our control, our very foundation is not in our control, but we want to exercise domination and control over people. Are we willing to die to this? Again, it is a death. And life will keep bringing relationships into our lives till we learn this lesson. You see, life is about relationships, and there are only three kinds of relationships. Relationship with what happens in my life, pleasure or pain. Relationship with others, whoever the other may be, my parent or the stranger on the road, and my relationship with myself. Daily living means relationships. And if this is understood, then this riddle has been solved because my relationship then is my relationship with one. Why? When I have the total acceptance of what is, I have the total acceptance of God's will. When my relationship with others is harmonious, my relationship is with God, because I have seen God has made everyone. And when my relationship with myself is harmonious, most important, I realize I have flaws which I didn't make. I was given a set of conditioning which shaped me and my flaws. So all my flaws are perfectly placed by God. Then I will think twice before finding flaws in others. A sense of humility will creep in. All right, this person has this flaw, but may have many strengths I don't have. So you see, this obsession with complaining and hating God's manifestation is what drops. This is the death. And when I die to whatever is troubling my thinking mind, I am living a life of peace. That is why when Pontius Pilate told Jesus, look here, your own people want you crucified. I'm really just doing my job. And he told Pilate, don't worry. Thou can have no power over me except if it is given to thee from above. You are an instrument. People are instruments. Through some, pain happens. Through others, pleasure happens. But we segment them. We reserve our love only for those who love us. Is this what our masters have taught us? We give expensive gifts to the ones we love the most. Is this what we have been taught? So we are living in a world of dualistic love, the love and hate polarity. And we will live our whole lives in this dynamic, caught in the web of two, until we understand what is true love. True love is not the opposite of hate. Love is the opposite of hate. True love has no opposite. And consciousness is true love. When I live this understanding, all there is consciousness appearing as various forms, appearing as you, me, he and she, appearing as the sibling I love, appearing as the sibling who troubles me the most. When I can live this equanimous understanding and I have a total acceptance for what is, I find I have risen above the love-hate polarity. I am out of the game of duality. And I see life for what it is. God never guaranteed me a life full of pleasure. I see life is sometimes pleasure, many times pain. That is the nature of life. There will be people who I like, people I don't like. So be it. I don't have to hug everyone. I don't have to like everyone. But I understand everyone is created by the same power. So true love is that love which is a total acceptance of what is, of people the way they are, and me the way I am. And I find there is only one possible result of living with this understanding: peace and harmony in daily living, a sense of equanimity and calm. I remember when my teacher, Ramesh Balsekar, would talk about peace and harmony in daily living, some seekers would say, oh, it's too simple. There's much more to it than that. So I developed this doubt. I really thought, is there more to spirituality, the highest realizations, spiritual experiences, seeing the light of 1,000 suns, and so on and so forth? And while I was having this doubt, I came across a book, Talks with Sri Ramana Maharshi, and I opened the book to a certain page and I read the lines, the state of equanimity is the state of bliss, full stop. And I closed the book because I said to myself, isn't it selfish to want a spiritual experience and still be a nasty human being? Isn't it selfish to want to take away the birthright of people, which is their peace of mind? And I found by and by, living a life of allowing and of receptivity, whoever came my way, I was completely open and receptive to the way God made them. I found my sense of hearing changed. It became listening. I sensed my words changed. I started using gentler words. And this is how I saw the transformation taking place. In subtle ways, not trying to instill my views, desires, hopes, and frustrations into others, because that is a form of violence. We are very good at covert violence. We all do it. So when we just live this simple understanding that we have to rise above the pairs of opposites so we are not stuck within them till the end, That is where peace is to be found. And it is quite beautiful and quite possible to reach that state. It is not something very far away. It is right here, right now, always available. Grace is always available. We are not living in caves. We are going to deal with people the minute we step out of here. Then we know where we stand. One of my favorite sayings which I speak about is Lord Gorakhnath's saying. Lord Gorakhnath was considered an avatar of Shiva. And he said, his whole teaching, I think, is Advaita in a nutshell. Sahaj mila so doodh barabar, mang liya so pani, khinch liya so rakt barabar, Gorakh bole bani. Sahaj mila so doodh barabar. What comes unasked is what is meant for you. Pleasure or pain. It is like getting milk. Mang liya so pani. When you ask, you get water. Why? Because the ego has come in thinking it knows better. For example, I want this particular relationship. Really? Are you sure? So it is like water. It is one step below milk. Khinch liya. So rakt barabar, when you snatch or take what doesn't belong to you, it is like getting blood. And mind you, it is not about taking material things from people. It also includes snatching their peace of mind. Then let us agree we all have blood on our hands. Sahaj mila so doodh barabar, mang liya so pani, khinch liya so rakt barabar, Gorakh bole bani. Thus speaks Gorakhnath. And so day by day, we live with this understanding so that when it is our time to leave, we just sit back one day. We know there's not much time left. Reflect on life. And then the only prayer that arises is a prayer of gratitude to God. That, oh God, you showed me that this life was the game of duality. Just like the game of chess, black and white. White army on one side, black army on the other. Everyone played their role the way they were designed to. The pawn was the pawn, the knight was the knight, bishop the bishop, castle the castle, queen the queen, king the king. Everyone in my life played their role, but was moved by a hand above. And most importantly, at the end of the game, we are all going into the same box. If we can live this understanding, the next time we are troubled by someone, that you and me are going into the same box. This life is an appearance on the screen of consciousness, directed by consciousness, produced by consciousness. Each actor has been assigned a role by consciousness. And without the light of consciousness, the movie would not play. If we can live this awareness, this understanding, then I would call that enlightened living. Now, I'd like to touch upon something else, not directly related, but since I'm here. As a child, I was very fascinated by the story of the Egyptian prince Akhenaten. Akhenaten was this young boy who was not really an alpha male. He was the son of the pharaoh. And he had a brother who was tough, aggressive, athletic. And therefore, the brother was the apple of the father's eye. And the father trained the elder brother to become the next pharaoh. Now, Akhenaten used to go into the desert and stare at the sun. He would get lost in looking at the sun. And the palace guards would come back and tell his mother, Queen Tai, that we don't know what he does. All day he is looking at the sun. And the mother was concerned. But the mother knew the child was special. And as fate would have it, Akhenaten's elder brother died and Akhenaten became the pharaoh. much to the father's dismay. This is the hand of destiny at play. Now, Akhnaton, in his innocence, said, look here, the sun is the only visible god. It gives us life. All of us, thieves, rich men, poor men, women, the sun looks equally upon all of us. And so he decided that he was fed up with the corrupt temple priests and how they were manipulating the people. So he said, I will start building temples to the sun. I don't need the priests. And he and his wife started living this teaching of shining their light on all. So they would get off the chariot, they would intermingle with the common people. And some really started loving them and this way of being. The others were aghast. How can a pharaoh behave this way? Akhnaton said, no invading other lands. Who are we to invade the lands? And so he got enemies that if we are not strong, we will be invaded. So the polaric opposite started kicking in. Game of duality. Until, unfortunately for him, he was imprisoned and he died because the priests were all powerful. When I visited Matri Mandir in the year 2000, it was still in the making. The discs were still being placed, if I remember correctly. And as most of us know, it looks like the sun. In those days, there was no internet. It had just started, YouTube, internet, it was the early days. And I concluded for myself, there was not much to read about, that Auroville and Matri Mandir, and how Matri Mandir has this one ray of light which hits the crystal and spreads its rays, is so similar to Akhnaton's city of Amarna, the sun. And then I mentioned this when I used to come, that I feel there's similarity in the two. And I used to be laughed at. 20 years ago, I used to be laughed at. It was only recently that I met a devotee of the mothers who was alive at that time. And I said, you know, I had this hunch. And now with the advent of the internet, a lot of information is available. And I found that the Auroville Charter is a map of Akhnaton's charter. This place belongs to no one. And point number one, point number two, point number. So for me, this experiment is the experiment of the one source consciousness. In the manifest world, the sun represents that. And that is why I feel it is a very precious second attempt, in my estimation, at a very great force. But this understanding which Advaita brings, the framework of duality, how we are trapped in it, and how can we, as Goldsmith says, rise above the pairs of opposites. We need to rise above the pairs of opposites. And when that happens, that is true love. It is like Ramakrishna was asked by one lady. She said, I feel I've got it. Really? He said. And she had a son. He said, you love your son a lot. I love my son the most. So he told her, go back home. The day you can love everyone's sons as much as yours, then you come back to me. And that would happen with this understanding that at the end of it, there's no yours and mine. That is why Goldsmith would say, he was a very famous healer in the 60s, very famous, that whenever he was given a gift, he said, I had the clear understanding they were not giving the gift to me, they were giving it to God. I lived that understanding moment to moment, just like the story of the Buddha, when he was walking by and someone started abusing him. His disciple was shocked that his master is not saying anything to this man. So when that abuser walked away, the disciple asked the Buddha, why didn't you say anything? He said, look, it's very simple. If someone gives you a gift and you don't take it, the gift stays with the giver. So if someone abuses you and you don't take it, the abuse stays with the abuser. We take delivery of it as individuals. He is abusing me. He is abusing me. How dare he? We've got trapped in horizontal time of cause and effect and blame and condemnation. That is why when someone asks Nisargadatta Maharaj, how do I get out of this? Give me a tool. He said, no tools. No, give me a tool. He said, all right. Next time you see something, change the internal dialogue from I see something to something is seen. Change it from I hear something to something is heard. In that way, this me center, I feel everything is pulling into me, that starts dissolving. Everything is happening to me becomes everything is happening the way it is. When this me center operates less and less, this obsession with me, I am dying. That death is the birth of the light of consciousness. When I don't see anymore through the physical eyes of duality, which I have been doing so far, and I see through the eye of singularity, the eye of wisdom, the third eye of Shiva. When I don't get lost in appearances because of duality, when divine wisdom starts operating, I am out of the game of two. Then I am in the realm of Ganpati. Ganpati is the absolute. The trunk is the third eye. This is how our rishis simplified the highest vibrations. The trunk of Ganpati goes to the belly. Why is the belly big? It is the seat of relationships. When my third eye is in harmony with the Manipur chakra, the seat of relationships, I am aligned. So when I look through the eye of wisdom, all my relationships get aligned. That, as we know, is Ganpati, the Lord of auspicious beginnings and the remover of obstacles. Everything has a meaning. Even one tusk is broken. Not two. Not two. Appears as two. That is the appearance. This manifestation is a reflection of the source within itself. If it was apart from the source, that means there's something other than the source. If we agree that God, consciousness, and the source is all there is, omnipotent, omnipresent, omniscient, nothing can be apart from it, which would actually mean for us that there's nothing apart from ourselves. It is like going in front of a mirror and saying, this reflection is not part of me. Is it possible? This reflection is your own reflection. And you are too busy finding fault with the reflection, not realizing it is you. It is you. It is only you. There is no other. This understanding is the end of all patterns in your life. Patterns you incarnate into daily, monthly, yearly, or lifetime to lifetime. And living this teaching that the sweetest voice I have ever heard in my life, maybe my mother's voice, father's voice, is appearing within my own consciousness. And the voice I detest the most is also appearing in my own consciousness, means I'm as close to both. Both are equally intimate to me. There is really nothing outside. There is nothing outside. It is all you. And the masters want us to understand this. There is nothing not you. So that is it in a nutshell. That is what I offer you all. This is what I speak about. And I hope this is some kind of inspiration in some way. And we see where it goes. As my teacher would say, the purpose of life is really quite simple. It is the living of it in peace and harmony. Of course, we have the higher definitions of self-realization, enlightenment being the purpose of life. But if we are living a life of peace and harmony, self-realization is not too far away. But if we are living a life of ignorance, battling day in and day out, fighting with people, arguing with people, and so on, then self-realization is a bit further away. Thank you.
I think there are great questions in this one, so if you allow, somebody wants to ask.
I thought you promised us some hot chai. Would anyone like to share anything or ask anything you're welcome to?
Thank you very much. Thank you. I appreciate everything you said. To accept everything is a great mission. To accept it as it is, a very great mission and a lot of work, because I have to let go of so many things to accept everything. All the parts of my ego that want to judge, that some trauma early in my life that wants to see things a certain way. Okay. So to accept, the word comes to me, gratitude. I have what I want when I love what I have. Does that make sense?
Of course.
Yeah. So for me, culturing a life of loving my life makes everything come to me as a gift. Does that make sense too?
Absolutely. Very hard to do. So if it is happening for you, it's beautiful, because that means your life is a life of gratitude.
Most of the time. I'm not saying I'm perfect. But I was listening to you, and it's the word that comes to me, an English word, arduous, to the exercise of, I loved your example of the mother loves the child. Now, can you love everyone like your child? And that's a hard thought.
Would you agree that the total acceptance of people for who they are, just the acceptance, let's keep love aside, would you say, is it hard to accept people for who they are, or it's fairly clear that one could accept people for the way God made them?
Well, I have cultivated that too.
Sure.
And my heart feels very at peace when I accept that this is their perspective, this is their life, this is their choice.
Yes.
And I accept you for who you are.
Yes.
Because these are the choices you made.
Sure.
So earlier you said, and I thank you for this, to pray for my enemies.
Yes. Very hard.
It was very beautiful, though. Very beautiful. It made me aware of where I'm not aware.
You see, and Goldsmith said something beautiful. He said, I had cracked the code, right, of duality. And he said, this praying for your enemies. I asked myself, how the hell do I pray for my enemies?
Trump!
And he said, then I got the answer. It was too hard for me initially. So he said, I told God, I am not able to pray for my enemies. So you pray for them through me. And it was done.
It's beautiful.
See, I can't do it as an individual. The joke is, life is such a joke. You know, deep sleep. We all know what deep sleep is. And we wake up and say, I slept well. Really? You were not there in deep sleep. Deep sleep was the absence of you. That's why you slept well. Deep sleep was the absence of you and your story of life. That's why you slept well. My teacher would say, when people had a problem with death, why don't you consider death as a very long deep sleep? Then no problem. Because we all know how beautiful deep sleep is. It's our own experience. But we are afraid of death. And death is nothing but a long deep sleep. But this me, with all its problems and complaints which it is identified, loves to wake up in the morning with the whole story and says, this is who I am. I'm the victim, I'm the aggressor, whatever it be. This is who I am, but that's not who you are. Because if it is who you are, it would have been throughout your life. It disappeared in deep sleep. So who are you exactly? Whereas that which is present in deep sleep is always ever present. It doesn't go anywhere. That is pure consciousness, untainted by me and my story of life. It is right here, right now. That child consciousness, that baby which you were, pure being, not judging, is right here, right now. It is the ego with its identifications and the me story which has veiled it. But that baby is right here. That baby is here. That purity did not go anywhere. And this is a rediscovery of that.
Yes, seen through the eyes of the wonder of a child, which has no judgment, just love for the stranger, the dog, the mother, just...
Because there was no separation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing. It's amazing. It's really each day, each conflict is a teacher. We look at it as a conflict which we don't like and which, makes our lives miserable. Each conflict is a teacher. Each failed relationship is a teacher. There is no such thing as failure. There is no such thing as success. Polaric opposites. The me says, I failed. Really? Are you serious? God is saying, I gave you a set of attributes, a situation. I created it all. And you're saying, I failed. So we are so good at sticking labels of duality on things that we consider something a failure. God has not called it a failure because I'm obsessed. I failed. How could I fail? I succeeded. Pride and arrogance. Pride and arrogance and guilt and shame, polaric opposites. But supposing I'm a businessman, I have a very good year, but I have the understanding that circumstances were presented by God. My own skill sets are not mine. God gave me intelligence, buddhi, allowed me to utilize them, and success happened. Pleasure, of course, it's the human experience, but no pride and arrogance. It's not my success. Similarly, I failed. Failure happens. Not my failure. The outcome was not what I intended, is what the Gita is about. All you can do is put in your effort. The results are not in your control. Does it mean that because the result is not what you hoped for, you are a failure? Who said that? The ego, obsessed with this doership. There's no such thing. You know, in our school, it is so sad. I remember in the fifth standard, a friend, he was not good in studies. He was athletic, good in sports. The teacher made him stand up on the desk and told him, please repeat after me 10 times, I am a failure. Just because he could not excel in geography. He didn't have the mind for it. But society labeled him a failure. That is what we do. Amazing.
You expressed the true love transcends the duality of love and need. Once having transcended hate and love, can true love also manifest as pure loving violence?
Pure loving?
Violence.
Violence?
For example, Ma Kali loving her Asura children and killing them, Rudra coming and without hate destroying, and Arjun going to war, right? And killing everyone, knowing that it was Krishna who killed everyone.
Yes. But I think there's a clarification needed here. That was not true love. Arjuna puts his bow and arrow down because he tells Krishna, I can kill anyone, but I won't kill my preceptors. I will not kill my preceptors. I am not going to fight. Krishna tells Arjuna, look here, your whole life, you have been trained to be a warrior. Your genetics are of a warrior. You have a role to play. And so, you putting your bow and arrow down is not your dharma. It is you who have to pick up that bow and arrow and fight. You think, I am the doer, and so you're putting the bow and arrow down. But when you realize, I, Krishna, as time, have already killed them, and you are merely the instrument through whom the killing will happen, then we will know where you stand and I stand. So violence, what you are saying is true love violence. This is not an act of true love. It has a violent end for sure. But these are separate topics. Dharma we stand for, dharma, whatever we feel our dharma is. As we know, Sri Aurobindo was the silent force behind the freedom struggle. He stood for it. But we have the master here who has written books and books and books on the subject spiritual, pointing to the supramental. And mind you, let's say murder. Murder is an extreme form of doership. I think I can take someone's life is extreme doership, just as an example of violence. My teacher would say, if you really had the understanding that consciousness is all there's nobody to hate. When there's nobody to hate, then when there's no other to hate in your life, it means there is really no other. And when there is no other, it means there is no me apart from the other. And when there is no me apart from the other, it means consciousness is all there is. Yet, I do what I think and feel I should do in a given situation. A boss has to tell an employee who is not performing that, look here, these are the targets, you haven't met them. The boss has to decide whether to tell the staff member to go. He doesn't have to love the staff member. But he is no longer finger pointing at an individual. He realizes this staff member has been given a certain capacity. He has tried his best. I need to decide as the boss whether to keep him or let him go. So it's no longer pointing our arrows at individuals and blaming them for their shortcomings. That is how our game changes. In my Bombay talk, one young actor came to see me and he said for the first time in his life, he saw his mother and father as a man and a woman, not his mother, not his father. He said the whole thing collapsed and I saw my mother as a girl. He said, I was shocked. I went to my hometown. I saw her as if I was not her son. And that scene was so different, so different. And then there was nothing not to honor. He had an incredible experience of the dropping away of the me center. You see, like I keep saying, we all say if we step into someone else's shoes, then we see things. That's rubbish. First, we need to step out of our own shoes, which means we have to let go of our conditioning. We are seeing ourselves through our own filters. We are seeing others through our own conditioning. If we are trying to step into another's shoes, we have to first get out of ours. If we get out of ours, means we leave our conditioning behind. If we left our conditioning behind, we would see others as pure presence. There's no conditioning. Then we would have no problem. If we meet people as pure presence, pure being, what problem will you have? Can someone push the buttons of presence? They can only push the buttons of an ego, thinking this is me. Pure presence, nothing can be pushed. It's amazing. Love would be Vishnu's 10 avatars who come at the moment of crisis to bring about balance so that the play goes on. Anyone else?
Can I ask? So God, Krishna, is with Arjuna, and he says, this is Vaikunyo Bhav Arjuna. Okay? So isn't he at that moment bestowing upon Arjuna enlightenment? And then there is no I.
Absolutely.
So I did not pick up the bow.
That's it. You said it.
God has done the action, has done the dharma of whatever his creation is going to be.
Yes. But the ego deluded thinks I am the doer.
Right.
That's exactly it.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
You know, I use the example of my mother's guru was a judge of the Bombay High Court. And sometimes he had to pass very difficult sentences, extremely harsh. He was a man of understanding. After he would pass the sentence, he would get up from his chair, go to the witness box and give a hug. Because he knew. We don't know what shaped this thief, for example. The thief's parents, how they were, how much lack of money was there. How do we know? Who are we to really judge? He knew he had a role to play, that of a judge, but he had compassion. So he didn't stop from that. And one phrase of his, which I picked up, which I love, if anyone thanked him for anything, not just his disciples, he was a very benevolent man, always giving of his time, giving of money. If anyone thanked him, his answer was, thanking me is like your left hand thanking your right hand. That is non-duality. There is no other. It's beautiful. For those who are interested or you have friends in Auroville, tomorrow I have a talk at the Auroville Library. Thank you. Thank you. Same time. Bye. Thank you.